Peter Komlostrovsky, Your Honor, on behalf of Mr. Edwards.
Could you pronounce your name one more time, please?
Komlostrovsky. Anything close will do. Well, I won't belabor the facts. As you know, this is an unemployment benefits eligibility case. The question is fault. Mr. Edwards broke up a very serious altercation between his grown sons, was arrested, went to jail, and when he finally got out, his job was no longer available to him. The hearing officer found that in spite of the charges, he acted appropriately at all times and he did not commit the acts that were the basis of the charges. The Industrial Claims Appeals Office reversed on the basis that he had pled guilty to a misdemeanor and that that by itself should be a basis for overturning the hearing officer's findings. I'd like to make three main points and then reserve most of my time for rebuttal if I can. The first one, I'd like to address the theory put forth in the ICAO's briefs and in the ICAO decision that any voluntary act in the chain, the causal chain that led to Mr. Edwards' loss of his job, should be equated with fault. And I think that's one of the simplest points to address in this. That's just simply not what the cases say. The cases say that Mr. Edwards, to be found to be at fault, someone would have to have committed a voluntary act such that he might be held to be responsible for the loss of his job, and that that needs to be assessed in the totality of the circumstances of the case. That's the Velo case, I think, is the lead case on that point. There are cases that deal with the question of whether an act was volitional or not. The Richards case is the lead case on that. They all deal with situations where there's some question about whether somebody committed a volitional act at all. In the Richards case, it had to do with a ski lift operator who disregarded safety instructions, and so the question was his failure to act volitional? They don't really relate to this situation.
Okay, let me ask you this. Two things. One, the panel asserts that the determination of fault is an ultimate finding of fact that it is entitled to make.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
That is true, Your Honor.
All right. So they have the ability to make a different determination than the hearing officer makes, at least as to that ultimate fact.
They do, Your Honor. Their determination still has to be based on the meet the standard of evidence required of their findings, but that is true. That is
so true. Now, in determining volitionality, for lack of a better term, there has to be some kind of an act by an individual that they're not necessarily forced to do by some outside force, but they voluntarily do, correct?
That's correct.
All right. And is your argument that there is no volition here by Mr. Edwards, or is your argument that the second prong of that test in Richards that says so as to be responsible for the separation, that's what your argument?
The second, Your Honor. I mean, there is some question about the volitionality. I mean, this all happened very fast. He reacted to save his children. You might make an argument about whether it was volitional, but I think the much stronger, simpler way to look at it is the second prong of the test. Was it a volitional act such that he might be held to be responsible?
The panel said, as I recall the panel's decision, it said that on that second issue, so to speak, that the hearing officer's finding of proximate cause was supported by the evidence and they were going to defer to it. And that proximate cause finding, I think, was that his actions in breaking up the fight between his two sons was the cause of his separation.
Right. And I would say that when they say that he has to have committed a volitional act such that he might be held to be responsible, you have to look at the term responsible as including some sort of culpability or fault. I mean, this whole thing is about fault, and that's a necessary element of the case. And I think if you look at some of the cases that deal with these situations, the Board of Water Commissioners would be one of the lead cases on this. They all look beyond just the chain of causality. The cases in Colorado on volitionality, as I said, all deal with, they don't deal with the question of whether the act was such that someone would be responsible, they deal about with the question of whether it was volitional at all. The second piece of it, the responsibility piece of it, isn't addressed.
Sir Carlos Rovsky.
Yes.
Doesn't volition also go to pleading guilty?
He certainly pleading guilty was a volitional act. I can't deny that. But I would say that, well, let me just say something about the weighing of the evidence. I think it's important to note that the ICAO and the in their original decision or in the briefs before this court do not disbelieve any of the hearing officer's findings. The hearing officer found that Mr. Edwards acted appropriately. I think in the brief, AG even says that his actions were understandable. I'd even go further than that. I think he might have been charged with some sort of neglect or wrongdoing if he hadn't intervened as he did. So that leaves the question about if the ICAO's reversal based on any evidence. And I would say that it is not. It's simply based on the fact that they felt that they were bound by, excuse me, the results of the criminal proceedings. And really, whether they say it explicitly or not, that's the effect of their ruling.
Well, if they say, you say there's no evidence at all, but why isn't the plea of guilty to the misdemeanor assault evidence?
Because the hearing officer found that he heard all that evidence and he heard the testimony, you know, from Mr. Edwards as to why he pled guilty in order to get home and save his job and support his family. He heard all of that, and he decided that in spite of the plea of guilty, that he did not commit the acts that were the basis for the charges. This is a key point. The hearing officer finds that the claimant did not commit child abuse or assault, rather that he only used force necessary to separate his two nearly adult sons from what he perceived to be a life-threatening fight. But that's a factual conclusion, and I would say that for the ICAO to find that in spite of that factual conclusion that he was at fault would leave their decision unsupported by substantial evidence. And really, as I said, the effect of this, whether it's said explicitly or not, is to say that a plea or a finding by the criminal court is dispositive. And that's just clearly not what the Colorado case is saying. I'd address you to the school district number one case is the lead case on that. That the hearing officers and the ICAO are supposed to come to their conclusions independent of the conclusions of other adjudicatory bodies. One last point with regard to that. I mean, Mr. Edwards testified that he only pled guilty to the misdemeanor to get out of jail and so that the bond could be reduced to something where he could return to his job, not knowing that the job was already gone. If he had been charged appropriately originally, he would have been out the next day. He never would have missed any work.
Sir Carlos Rovsky, the panel said the following. The hearing officer's determination that the claimant did not commit child abuse or assault, the criminal charges for which were the underlying basis for his discharge, is unfounded in light of the claimant's corresponding conviction for misdemeanor assault as found by the hearing officer. A plea of guilty may not be accepted unless there is a factual basis for the charge, and the panel cites Colorado Rule of Civil Procedure 11A6.
I think that if you, I went back to Rule 11, and it does provide, and I think I addressed this in the briefs, that establishment of the facts can be waived as the basis. It's perfectly possible to waive establishment of the facts when you enter a plea of guilty.
The record indicate?
We do not. None of this, the employer appealed here, but never filed a brief. So this all came up. We were all blindsided by this, and there's no record on that. I would like to point out, though, that I am very emphatically not asking for a remand and more findings here. These are emergency benefits, and that would definitely be a fallback position for me. We would very much like to have a reversal and a reinstatement of the benefits. These benefits are supposed to be liberally construed, and they're for emergency situations when people lose their jobs through no fault of their own. So, and I think, unless there are more questions, I think I better save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Alice Hosley. I represent the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. My registration number is 32195. I think your honors have hit on the crux of the issue here, which is, did the panel err by concluding that the hearing officer's finding of facts was not supported by the weight of the evidence? The evidence that was presented at trial was that the claimant had been arrested, charged, and convicted. He pled guilty to misdemeanor assault. This idea that the hearing officer based the findings and came to these findings of fact that he did not commit assault is against the weight of the evidence. The claimant actually testified at the hearing that he was involved in this physical altercation. I think the quote was that he had to beat them apart. I think that what the evidence in the transcript and the underlying evidence at the hearing presents is that there was substantial evidence in the record for the panel to decide that the hearing officer's decision was erroneous. Now, the deference given to the panel's decision is what you touched on, Your Honor, and that is that the panel is authorized to make its own ultimate determination on the legal conclusion. Fault is a legal conclusion. And the panel's holding must be affirmed if it's supported by the weight of the evidence. Again, this is all getting kind of circular. The weight of the evidence that was presented at trial certainly clearly substantiates the panel's determination of fault. I think it's also important, and I think Your Honor's questions as to what, trying to hone in what opposing counsel's arguments are, they're not arguing that he didn't choose to inject himself. I can't get from this the way the argument is presented that there was anything invalid or inappropriate from his plea. There's been no evidence presented that there was something wrong with the procedure or something at the criminal stage that would give doubt as to the validity of this plea. And he's not arguing that he missed work because of the incarceration, or that the discharge was because he missed work. So putting all these things in place, the claimant took a volitional action to interject himself into the physical altercation. The consequences of that was arrest and incarceration. I don't think there's any debate that that is an unintended consequence, or that it was not his intent, or he's not necessarily culpable. But as those terms are used in this idea of fault with the case law that we deal with in this issue, that's not the question we determined. It's a volitional act, and I don't feel as though that has really been in dispute.
So, Ms. Hogan,
yes.
You're saying that culpability is not part of the fault equation?
The case is Richards talks about it is not you don't have to have intent, and it's not a culpable mental state that goes along with your volitional action. You don't need to intend for your action to take a certain meaning or a certain consequence. It's the taking or lack of taking of that action made it with a volitional, voluntary state of mind that is the variables to the equation.
That's what I'm asking you is, Mr. Komlosorowski says that there's a two-part test in Richards. One is, was he at fault for the separation such that he is responsible for it?
Right.
Do you agree that it's a two-part test, or is it all just one part? I mean, is responsibility here culpability, or is responsibility causation, or what does responsibility mean? I mean, I wrote the case, and and I'm asking you to help me here.
Yeah.
What did I mean?
What did you mean?
What do I mean?
All right, let me see if I can help you revise history here, what you meant in Richards. I think that responsibility is not culpability. Responsibility is the responsibility for the consequences of your actions. So I would put it more in the camp of causation. It is, you know, this whole chain of events. But for the volitional action, which in this case is the interjection into the physical altercation, he would not have been arrested. He would not have been charged. He would not have been incarcerated. He would not have missed work. So I think responsibility is that I disagree with opposing counsel's proposition that he wasn't responsible. He was responsible. He's responsible for his actions, intended consequences or not. The other idea is, the flip side of this is, if he's not responsible for his actions, who is? Why should the employer be their tax liability rate? Why should they be impacted for the actions of an employee that didn't happen at work, had nothing to do with work? Why should they be held responsible for paying and for benefits coming out of their account, and their account being penalized as their tax rate goes up, as there are claims made on it? If we're talking about responsibility, if the claimant's not responsible for his actions, which led to this causal chain of events, then who is?
Totally. We're in an unenviable position here, because what we don't have is we don't have the acquittal. And in a perfect world, that's exactly what would have happened here, is the defendant would have said, I didn't do this, and you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that I didn't do it, and I'm going to stand trial. Instead, what we have is we have an admission. That's precisely what a plea of guilty is.
That's right.
I'm responsible for it. There are factual bases that underlie this. I know what I'm doing. I'm making a voluntary and knowledgeable plea of guilty. In light of those circumstances, I'm hard-pressed to see how we can overturn the panel who relies upon that plea of guilty to say, well, that the factual findings of the hearing officer are just completely contrary to what is before us in the record.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Your Honor. I agree. I think this idea of a waiver of a factual basis, you know, that comes up in certain circumstances when the guilty plea is based on a charge that wasn't the basis of the arrest. You know, in the plea bargain, there may not be a factual basis for the charge that is ultimately the basis for the guilty plea. We don't have that situation here. It is perfectly acceptable in a Rule 11 advisement for a defendant to waive the establishment of the factual basis. And by that waiver, it's, you don't have to put it on the record. I admit that there is a factual basis for my guilty plea, but I waive the establishment of it because we don't have to go through all that. We accept it. You know, there's also an offered plea. We don't have any of that record. What we have is a conviction. The fact that the hearing officer went, heard all this evidence and decided that he didn't actually commit assault, it is contrary to all the evidence that was presented and even the testimony of the claimant. So I agree with you. I don't see how the panel's conclusion can be overturned on the basis of law. They did not overstep. They did not err by concluding the hearing officer made findings of fact that weren't supported by the evidence. I would also just like to point out that the due process arguments that were raised, this is anticipation of possible rebuttal argument, the due process due process requires notice and an opportunity to be heard. The claimant had both of these things. He had counsel to cross-examine at the hearing. He presented evidence. He, in fact, testified. He called witnesses. This idea that the panel, that the panel's decision was based on something that evidence that they didn't get to rebut at the hearing, this is the forum to challenge the panel's conclusion. And that's not a due process issue. The correct procedure has happened in this case, which is if they want to challenge the panel's determinations, this is the forum to do it. And you can make that determination as to, you have de novo review of the panel's ultimate conclusion. So you certainly have the ability to do that without any violation of due process. If the court has no further questions, I will sit. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'd like to hit 4 points in rebuttal here. The first is, I'm not taking the position that volitionality is not an issue. I'm simply saying it doesn't have to be reached in this case. It's a much more, I mean, you can read the transcript and decide for yourself whether there was impulse involved. There's no record made of that. That's a very interesting issue, is whether his actions were volitional or not. But I don't think there's any record or way to decide it based on what it is. Certainly it has not been established that it wasn't volitional. I mean, that it was volitional. The second point I'd like to make is, if any action in the cause, the causal chain that led to the loss of employment equated with responsibility, I think you would very quickly get into some very absurd situations. I mean, with the fact that he took the bus and it didn't break down, mean that he was responsible for losing his job because he was home in time to interrupt the fight. I mean, you get into all sorts of absurd things. There has to be some sense of responsibility. And I think because we're talking about fault, responsibility has to involve more than responsible in the sense of just being somewhere in the causal chain. It just doesn't make any sense otherwise. The Richards case really, I think, didn't address this. Richards was about when a failure to act could be considered to be a volitional action. The next position point I'd like to make is, you know, it may be wrong for people to accept a guilty plea for something that they have a good defense for, but they do it. They do it for good reasons, as in this case, and I don't know what all reasons, but you know perfectly well, we all know that it happens, and the question of whether it happened or not in this case was a factual issue. The hearing officer heard all the facts and decided that Mr. Edwards, despite his plea, had not committed the acts that constituted the crimes he was charged with. And the key point on this is, the panel doesn't really disagree with that. They don't have, they don't say anywhere that he was wrong. They're simply saying that by taking a guilty plea that he can't raise that issue. And it really is, spoken or unspoken, a ruling that they are bound by the proceedings in the criminal courts. Then the last point I'd like to make is just, again, These are benefits, as you know, the case law says that they're supposed to be, awards are supposed to be granted liberally. Disputes are supposed to be resolved in the favor of the claimant. These are emergency benefits for families in bad situations, and I hope you take that into consideration. And unless you have any questions, that's...
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments here this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course.